important that we understand why this was given to us, as Paul said, that the writings of the Old Testament are given for us our learning. That history is important for us to understand. And as we go through this, I hope that everyone will begin to see the parallels that can be drawn from it and the things that can be learned from what this Bible has, or what this story, excuse me, has to teach us about sin and how badly sin can corrupt us, and how, unfortunately, how indifferent people become to sin. And that's something, of course, we see that's prevalent in the world today. We'll begin by reading the first 8 verses of Judges chapter 19, beginning in verse 1. And it came to pass in those days, when there was no king in Israel, that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim, who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. And his concubine played the whore against him, and went away from him unto her father's house in Bethlehem, Judah, and was there for 4 whole months. Excuse me. And her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her, and to bring her again, having his servant with him and a couple of asses. And they brought him she brought him into her father's house. And when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. And his father-in-law, the damsel's father, retained him, and he abode with him 3 days. So they did eat and drink and lodge there. And it came to pass on the 4th day, when they arose early in the morning, that he rose up to depart, and the damsel's father said unto his son-in-law, comfort thine heart with a morsel of bread, and afterward go your way. And they sat down and did eat and drink, both of them together, for the damsel's father had said unto the man, be content, I pray thee, and tarry all night, and let thine heart be merry. And when the man rose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him, therefore he lodged there again. And he arose early in the morning on the 5th day to depart, and the damsel's father said, comfort thine heart, I pray thee. And they tarried until afternoon, and they did eat, both of them. Now this chapter starts out by saying, reminding us that at this time, there was no king in Israel. The Israelites were leaderless. And sometimes you look about the world today and we see how corrupt many of our leaders have become, not only in this country, but in other lands throughout the world, and how morally bankrupt some of them are. And we realize that people need good leaders. They need leaders they can look up to. They look for leaders that they can respect, and leaders that they can follow, not only to be a civilized nation or civilized group of people, but, of course, morally as well, as people who are godly and lean towards sinless things. And so Israel was at a time here that, of course, we'll remember that Judges takes place after the book of Joshua. Moses has led the children of Israel out of the promised land. Joshua led them into the promised land and fought against the people that were there. And in the book of Judges, we see as a transition time between the good leadership that was displayed by Joshua, and eventually the Jews asking God for a king. They looked around at the nations around them, and they all had kings, and they decided that they wanted to have a king as well, and eventually God would acquiesce to that, much to the destruction of countless Jews who would follow after the evil kings that would come throughout their history. But in this case, we see that there's no real leadership being shown within a nation of Israel, so they're kind of like a rudderless ship. They don't really know which way to go and what to do, and they're trying to practice the things that were passed down to Moses by God, but they have a lack of leadership, and it shows in the things that they do and the way that they act. And so we realize that when the promised land was eventually conquered, for the most part, that hadn't been a complete following of God's word, and we're going to see the ramifications of that later in this chapter. But they had driven many of the people out of the land. The land had been divided between the 12 tribes, and the Levites were kind of scattered amongst the other 11 tribes. They were the priests. They were to be looked at and looked after and supported by the other tribes, and so they didn't have their own land, so to speak. They just dwelt in other lands, but this particular Levite had settled near Mount Ephraim. And this Levite had, obviously, he was married to someone else, and then he also took for a wife this woman of Bethlehem in Judah, and the scripture calls her a concubine. And I have to admit that I had a different understanding of that word than what it actually means. This is the definition from Smith's Bible Dictionary. A concubine. The difference between wife and concubine was less marked among the Hebrews than among us, owing to the absence of moral stigma. The difference probably lay in the absence of the rite of the bill of divorce, without which the wife could not be repudiated. In other words, there were certain restrictions under the law of Moses where a man could put away his wife, but the wife could not seek a divorce from the husband. And that's where these laws about the concubine come into effect. With regard to the children of wife, and of concubine, there was no such difference as our illegitimacy implies. The latter were a supplementary family to the former, their names occurring in the patriarchal genealogies, and their position and provision would depend on the father's will. The state of concubinage is assumed and provided for by the law of Moses. A concubine would generally be either one of four categories. A Hebrew girl brought of her father, like literally someone who purchased the wife from her father, a Gentile captive taken in war, a foreign slave bought, or a Canaanite woman, bond or free. The rights of the first two were protected by the law, but the third was unrecognized and the fourth prohibited. Free Hebrew women also might become concubines. So this was considered like a wife of a lower estate, or like almost like a second-class citizen or a second-class wife, one that didn't have to carry the same weight or the same importance as the person's primary wife. And since this woman had no legal recourse to dissolve her relationship with her husband, she left him and returned home to her father. The phrase is used in the scripture that she played the whore against him. This is a very general term that could mean anything from sexual immorality to simply abandoning her duties as a wife, as she had agreed to marry this man at one point, and then she returns to her father. So any one of these things could cause her to fall under that accusation. So what the Levite does is he goes to the house of his concubine's father to bring her back to his home. This girl's father seems genuinely happy to meet the Levite. He offers him hospitality and asks him to stay and feeds his animals and gives his servant that came with him a place to stay. And what plays out over the next couple of verses is almost seems like something you would see on a situation comedy on TV, where the father keeps encouraging them to stay another day and they're trying to leave. And because of the customs that they had at that time in the land of Israel, a person was obligated to show hospitality. And it wasn't just, hey, you know, you can sleep here tonight before you go off to wherever you're going to go. It was an obligation. It actually took several days for them to complete. And so the father's trying to show hospitality. The Levite's trying to show his appreciation by not leaving, by accepting the hospitality. And so they go back and forth, back and forth. And so they end up being there for several days before this Levite is able to leave with his servant and his wife. We'll continue reading now Judges chapter 19 and verse 9. And when a man arose up to depart, he and his concubine and his servant, his father-in-law, the damsel's father, said unto him, Behold, now the day draweth toward evening. I pray you, tarry all night. Behold, the day groweth to an end. Lodge here, that thine heart may be merry. And tomorrow get you early on your way, that thou mayest go home. But the man would not tarry that night, but he arose up and departed and came over against Jebus, which is Jerusalem, and there with him two asses saddled. His concubine also was with him. And they were when they were by Jebus, the day was far spent, and the servant said unto his master, Come, I pray thee, and let us turn into this city of the Jebusites and lodge in it. And his master said unto him, We will not turn aside thither into the city of a stranger that is not of the children of Israel. We will pass over to Geba. And he said unto his servant, come and let us draw near to one of these places to lodge all night in Geba or in Ramah. And they passed on and went their way, and the sun went down upon them when they were by Geba, which belongeth to Benjamin. And they turned aside thither to go in and to lodge in Geba. And when he went in, he sat him down in a street of the city, for there was no man that took them into his house to lodging. So now we see this Levite and his concubine and his servant finally get away from his father-in-law's house, and they're going to travel back to Mount Ephraim. And on their way, they pass a town here called Geba, which eventually would become Jerusalem. And the reason why the Jebusites were still in Jerusalem is because the Jews had not fully executed what God had told them to do when they took over the promised land. He told them to go in there, and they were to drive all the people that were in there out. And they didn't accomplish this mission to its fullest, and so there were still pockets within Israel where Canaanites and Jebusites and some of these other Gentile people still occupied the land of Israel. And so had they driven all these people out, when this Levite went by Jerusalem, they could have stopped in there because it would have been a Jewish city just like everywhere else that they encountered. But because it was Jebusites that were there, the Levite didn't feel comfortable stopping there in a pagan city. He wanted to go on to Geba, which was a city of the tribe of Benjamin. And so he felt like, well, there's fellow Jews there. They're going to treat us with hospitality. And eventually he would learn what a tragic mistake that he made by going on. And so at this time, it was customary when people were traveling, especially within the land of Israel, if they went into a town and they didn't know anybody there and there wasn't an inn there or some place that they could pay to stay at, they would go down to the town square, and the citizens of that city were obligated to offer this person hospitality. Now, this is something that feels kind of strange to us. In our day and time, we certainly would offer hospitality to somebody we knew, but it's much harder to offer hospitality to somebody that you don't know, to invite them into your home and to open your home to them and to offer them food and things of this nature. But this is something that God required of the Jews at that time. We know the New Testament also teaches us that we're supposed to be a hospitable people, and sometimes that's something that in today's environment that we live in, we often feel it's not easy for us to do, especially if it's somebody that we don't know and never heard of. We have a hard time showing hospitality, but that's what God required of his people then. And so they went to the town square hoping or expecting that someone would offer them lodging for the night and food for their animals and whatnot so that they could continue their travel the next morning. We'll continue reading now with verses 16 through 21. And behold, there came an old man from his work out of the field at even, which was also of Mount Ephraim, and he sojourned in Geba, but the men of the place were Benjamites. And when he had lifted up his eyes, he saw a wayfaring man in the street of the city, and the old man said, whither goest thou, and whence comest thou? And he said unto him, we are passing from Bethlehem, Judah, toward the side of Mount Ephraim. From thence am I, and I went to Bethlehem, Judah, but I am now to the house of the Lord. And there is no man that receiveth me to house. Yet there is both straw and provender for our asses, and that bread and wine also for me and for thy handmaiden and for thy young man, which is thy servant. There is no one of anything. And the old man said, peace be with thee. Howsoever let all thy wants lie upon me, only lodge not in the street. So he brought him into his house and gave provender unto the asses, and they washed their feet and did eat and drink. So as they're sitting in a town square trying to figure out what's going to happen, or if they're just going to have to spend the night on the street, as it were, an old man came from working out in the fields, and he came upon the travelers and invited them into his house, suggesting for reasons that we're about to read, why it wasn't a good idea for them to just sleep in the town square. So he invited them into his house and gave them water to wash their feet and food and things to drink and food for their animals as well. So it's a very generous person who saw someone in need and decided to help them out. One thing that's kind of confusing to some Bible scholars is when the Levite talks about he's going to the house of the Lord. At this time, obviously, we just talked about Jerusalem. The temple hadn't been built at Jerusalem. And if I remember correctly, the tabernacle at this time was still in Shiloh. And so we're not sure, Bible scholars aren't sure if he meant that he was going to wherever the tabernacle was at that time, or if he was referring to the house of the Lord as his house. That's a bit of confusion that Bible scholars have about that particular part of that verse. However, we see that this man has decided that he's going to invite these people into his home and to take care of them until they're ready to leave on their journey the next day. We'll now read verses 22 through 24. Now, as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about and beat at the door and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, Bring forth a man that came into thine house, that we may know him. And the man, the master of the house, went out unto them and said unto them, Nay, my brethren, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man is come into mine house. Do not this folly. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them I will bring out now, and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you, but unto this man do not so vile a thing. So, what's happening here is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. These men of the city, they're called sons of Belial. That just meant an undesirable person or someone who was sort of a social outcast and morally bankrupt type of person who took advantage of other people and was not the sort of person you'd want to be around or have anybody else, you know, hanging around with. But they wanted this Levite and probably his servant too for the reason that they were these men were homosexuals, and they wanted to take advantage of this man. And what happens next is just something that, I'll be honest, I can't understand. Because what this old man does is he offers these men his own daughter and the wife of the Levite. He said, do whatever you want to these women, but leave the men alone. And in that day and time and in that society, he might have felt like that was his best option at that point of a thing to do. Now today, I know I raised a son, but I have a granddaughter now, and I cannot imagine putting her health and her safety ahead of my own. But that's what happened in this particular situation. This man felt threatened, and so he thought he could defuse the situation by offering these women to these men instead of having them take the Levite. And so they took the concubine of the Levite. They took her. It doesn't ever mention again what happened to his daughter, whether they took her as well or not. She's not mentioned, and we don't know what happened to her in this situation. But they took the Levite's concubine and left the men alone. Now we'll read Judges 19, verses 25 through 28. But the men would not hearken to him, so the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her and abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day, and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was, till it was light. And her lord rose up in the morning, and opened the doors of the house, and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And he said unto her, Up, and let us be going. But none answered. Then the man took her up upon an ass, and the man rose up, and gat him into his place. The attitude this man had, to me, is quite appalling. He let these men take his wife, even though she was a wife of a lower estate as it was looked upon at that time. He obviously cared enough about her to go back and get her when she was at her father's house, but then he just let these men take her out, and now it doesn't say that she's dead, but he just looks at her and tells her to get up, and it's like how could you do that to somebody you cared about? And so we see that he didn't have much compassion for her to let that happen to her. And then after it happened, he didn't have any compassion as far as taking care of her and trying to help her. And so What he did was he got her up on one of his animals and went back to his home. And now we'll read the last two verses of this chapter, verses 29 and 30. And when he was coming to his house, he took a knife and laid hold of his concubine and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces and sent her into all the coasts of Israel. And it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice, and speak your minds. So, as bad as what he did before was, this really just seems unbelievable that he would take the body of this woman and cut it into 12 pieces and then send it to the leaders of each one of the 12 tribes. Obviously, to show what it shows is how far into sin that Israel had fallen. I mean, this man was afraid to go into Geba because he didn't want to be associated with these pagans. And then he went to another city of Israelites, and it was his own people, the Jews, that did this to this woman. And so we do see of another instance in the Old Testament in 1 Samuel chapter 11 and verse 7, where Saul had performed a similar task, only he had taken two oxen and divided them into 12 portions, and he sent them out to the 12 tribes of Israel as a call to arms. And it was like a call to arms, and it was also meant as a curse to those who did not respond to that call. And obviously this is something that happens later in the in the time frame, because we know that Saul and Samuel came after the book of Judges. But again, it's this idea of showing how heinous and how terrible things had become. If any of you are familiar with the story of William Wallace, he was a Scottish man who led a rebellion against the English Empire and tried to make Scotland a independent state. When he was executed, he was cut in pieces also, and parts of his body were taken to different parts of England to show to persuade people not to rebel. It's like, this is what happens to you if you rebel. So this brings us to the conclusion of another unusual story from Judges. There's several other stories within that book that are also quite different and quite strange compared to the rest of the Bible. This one is quite possibly the strangest of them all. But again, it shows us this idea of how if we don't look to the right examples for leadership, if we don't follow the things that God tells us to do and we decide to follow what a man says is the right thing to do, this is where that path leads. It leads into people that have no sense of moral decency. They have no moral compass. They do what makes them feel good and what they want to do, no matter how bad it is or how much it hurts other people. And certainly we realize as Christians that's not a environment that we want to be in or a path that we want to follow. And we want to encourage and hope that others would not want to follow it as well. Of course, God gives us free will and people are going to do what they want to do. But the more we try to be a positive light and a positive influence, the more people that way, the more chances there are that people would respond to a righteous and a moral living in a positive way instead of a negative way. And it would be a better environment for everyone to live in. So hopefully some things have been learned from this. I hope it encourages you to go back and read as much as you can from not only from the New Testament, but from the Old Testament, because even these things that seem kind of strange and different to us, when we read about them and we study them and we look into the background of why things happened the way that they did, it gives us a better understanding of how God wants us to live and how he wants us to interact with other people and the kind of example that he wants us to set. That brings us to the conclusion of the lesson today. As always, we never want to miss the opportunity to invite any who needed services of the church to come. Always sing the invitation song.